This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to Place to Be Nation's Main Event, a roundtable experience looking at today's pro wrestling landscape. And now, here's your host, Scott Criscolo.
Place to Be Nation! Three straight weeks! Is this some type of Cal Ripken-esque streak? Probably not, because there won't be no show next week. Welcome, Place to Be Nation, to your home for everything modern-day wrestling. PTBN's Main Event. I'm your host, Scott Criscolo. Third straight week. Of course, last week we had our special show. Keep voting. If you haven't listened to the special pay-per-view draft yet, go ahead and vote. Chad Campbell with a six. Last time I checked, he had a six-vote lead over both Graham Cawthon and Greg Phillips. So check the show out and cast your vote. Back to normal tonight. Three of the core four here as the NBA Finals began this evening out in Oakland. And I believe one of the core three said it was tied after the Cavs had an early lead. Got a lot to talk about, so let's dive in. Core four. One, two, three. The Boogie of the Bayou. Mr. Andrew Reach.
My attention is going to be a little divided watching this game, but then again, I just saw the first quarter, and my attention might not be divided at all.
That's okay, because this guy will be paying full attention and give half as much information as you anyway. He is not PTB Nation's conscience. He is PTB Nation's sounding board of everything anti-WWE, Mr. Jordan Duncan.
I'll only have half my attention on this, too, because I'm interested in the game as well. There's a really good episode of Idiot Test on Game Show Network right now. Really good.
Starring stuff. Vince McMahon, Kevin Dunn, and no.
And a bunch of women.
And a bunch of dumb divas. No. And JD, pleasure. And thanks. Back, of course, my favorite person on the planet, a contributor to PlacementNation.com, and, of course, the purveyor of Marvel.com, Mr. Ben Morris.
Yeah, I got to apologize. My attention's a little divided because I'm playing as the Phoenix Suns on NBA Live 95 right now.
95.
Thunder Dan Marley.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Gentlemen, thank you. Welcome back. JD, if you're interested, the Clash of Champions, I almost said. Night of Champions 13 is still available in the pay-per-view draft if you'd like to draft your guy Daniel Bryan winning the title and then getting screwed the next night, which ruins everything about wrestling.
I was there live for that show. It was a heck of a moment that they ripped away from me. And that's where it all started, boys.
Yeah, and you've never... guys, we got a lot to talk about. A boatload to talk about. And we'll start on Sunday night, which, of course, was the network presentation, because technically not a pay-per-view, network presentation of Elimination Chamber, which I thought was actually a really good show. Sans a match and a half. We'll talk about, we'll get us ready for Money in the Bank, which will be another show you'll be at there, JD, to heckle, and your children will have to sit in another section so they don't know who you are.
Yes,
you're sitting in section two, and they're in section 447. So you have enough to throw.
I'm actually sitting on JBL's lap. I splurged for the good ones.
Lauren Swoggle there. Duncan Swoggle. Yes, of course, that is coming next Sunday from the Nationwide Arena in, as the great Frankie Williams once said, Columbus, Ohio. And we'll talk about that. We already have the match. And we have a couple other matches on there as well. A lot of news to talk about this week. And then, at the end of the program, gentlemen, Chapter 2 of PTBN's oral history of Total Nonstop Action, 2003.
Yes!
I could just skip everything and start now.
We could add a moment from last night's episode. Based
you know that segment is basically you reading something and us laughing at it.
Yeah, right.
And there's nothing better. Simplicity is the motherhood of invention, or whatever the hell that fucking term is. All right, guys, let's dive in. Sunday night, Elimination Chamber from Corpus Christi. The first observation I had And then I realized why. Somebody said on one of our, I don't know if it was our thread that we were chatting on or another one, that, wow, there seem to be a lot of little kids in the audience, like near the first few rows, like, you know, kids younger than would be there for a pay-per-view. And then you think to yourself, well, don't forget, this crowd originally bought these tickets for a 1 o'clock house show. So there's a lot of 9-, 10-year-olds in the first few rows that normally you wouldn't see on pay-per-view nights because it's late. But of course,
and the tickets were a lot cheaper.
Probably. Yeah. Could you imagine those lucky bastards?
I know.
Well, I sat third row for $7.
Yeah.
Or whatever house.
But I'm sitting in the nosebleeds next Sunday, and I paid like $100 basically.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, pretty much. So I noticed a lot of people are like, oh, the crowd sucks. Well, it wasn't a pay-per-view based crowd. It didn't have a lot of max on it. It was regular, like, diehards, you know, and younger kids that don't make a lot of noise. So that's probably why the crowd seemed a little, I don't want to say flaky, but just different. Did you, Reese, did you catch that too?
I felt like it was kind of more like a, like you're saying, like a house show type of crowd.
Yeah.
You know,
I
mean, they had the bells and whistles with the set and, you know, all the graphics and stuff like the network has. You know, they also got the one coming up in Japan, but that's kind of a super show as it is. But for this one in Corpus Christi, it did seem a little bit, you know, tamer. It didn't seem like the crowd was kind of taking everything for granted, because pay-per-view crowds do have that tendency to kind of be sitting around waiting for big things to happen.
Right.
And for this one, it seemed like they were pretty receptive. It seemed for me like Owens, Cena. I felt like they were really dialed in for that one, but they didn't really let themselves down, you know, throughout the stretch of the match or the stretch of the show after that match. I felt like they were pretty excited about it.
Mm. And I almost wonder too if the reason they woke up for Owens is those were late ticket sales for people who found out that match was on the show and then went and bought a ticket, you know,
and jumped in. Yeah, no, it's a good point. I agree with that too. Interesting looking arena. I mean, it's a small place, the American Bank Center in Corpus Christi. Clearly, like a Raw building, even a SmackDown building, and a house show building. Normally, a place you wouldn't see, or like a 1996 pay per view building. Not necessarily one for now. So it was kind of neat to see something really contained, particularly when you had to have a gigantic, gigantic contraption in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That town is host to one of my favorite shows. It was the Clash of Champions when Sting got kicked out of the Horsemen.
Yes. And then he ripped his knee apart hanging off the cage wall. Yes.
Yeah.
I do remember.
Not one of my favorite moments.
There have been a few Corpus Christi
goodies.
Clashes. I definitely don't think there was a pay-per-view. How old is this building? Let's see. Opened in 1967. Okay, so this is the original place.
Jeez.
Let's see what's been here. Does it say? Contra in 2007. Oh, this is interesting. Oh. Listen to this. It is owned by the city of Corpus Christi, Texas, and managed by SMG. The in-house catering company is Centerplate, which usually sucks, a company that offers special event consulting and custom catering for food and beverage requirements. In 2007... the arena was the site for a controversial event in the WWE. The same day as the scheduled show, Chris Benoit died. The show was canceled, and fans received a full refund. So, but I definitely think there was more than one clash. Before we continue, now it's going to nag at me. Let me take a look at there was definitely, and I'm sure there were probably pay-per-views there too.
This is great radio, guys. Nothing more thrilling than looking stuff up on Wikipedia.
Yeah, you know, Ben, you usually talk a lot, so why are you
talking
quiet?
About really depressing events?
Jesus, you know, usually you can fill, but you're just sitting here watching us drown. That's great.
Ben, shouldn't you be beating the Sonics right now?
Yeah, I'm very distracted. I don't know. I just don't have strong feelings about the USA Trade Arena or whatever.
So talk about Sean Kemp eating all of his... or the funniest joke, Sean Hemp.
He would have ate it all, but his kids got to it first.
Yeah, pretty much. Let's see. There's got to be a few. Let's see. Cleveland, New Orleans, Fort Bragg, Charleston, Troy. Yep, Clash of the Champions 10, Texas Shootout, February 6, 1990. That's the one that Mr. Reese referred to, where Sting got kicked out of the Horseman and then blew his knee out. Most of them were like Florida. There were a lot of Georgias. I mean, there was probably at least 12 of the 30-something clashes in the state of Georgia.
Scott, I just like giving you the avenue to nerd out about locations and title belts
because
it gives me a chance to fold my clothes.
I know. I love belts and arenas. I love belts and arenas. Daytona, yes. Vegas, Denver, Milwaukee. No, I guess that was the only one. Why do I feel like there were more than that? All that for one fucking show that we already mentioned. All right, let's go. All right, fuck this. All right, let's go to, wow, 3 F-bombs in about 15 seconds. I'm sure I'm sure going to get a memo for that.
You would lose on the Dangerous Alliance podcast.
Yes, the Dangerous Alliance, yeah.
Good old Will from Corpus Christi, Texas? Corpus, I don't know.
Corpus Christi. All right, let's go to the card. Dark match, Stardust defeated Zack Ryder. Big whips. Then the first of the two chamber matches. The WWE Tag Team Championship. The New Day. The Lucha Dragons, Kid and Cesaro, which is now going to be Cesaro and Cesaro.
Yeah,
we'll explain that in a minute. Primetime players, the Ascension. it's so sad that I can't take them seriously anymore. And Los Matadores with that stupid midget. Can't believe they still have him. All right. This was a lot of fun. Part of me thought they were forcing the "we got to do something ridiculous" issue. Which is why that one Lucha Dragon was it?
Kalisto.
It was Kalisto whose friggin' leg was stuck for about the first 9 minutes of the match. But for the most part, it wasn't a bad show. It wasn't a bad match. It was fun, but you could definitely tell at times they were trying to force the, well, we got a bunch of guys who could like kill themselves in this thing. Let's see if they can all do it at the same time. That's what I felt like. But for the most part, I enjoyed the match, and the New Day retained their belts. Benjamin, your overall thoughts. What do you think?
I liked it. I liked it as a showcase for the tag team division. You're 100% right about how sad it is to with the Ascension. It's not just like they're in ring work or anything you can point to. It's they just look like they walked off an indie show.
Yeah.
And it's crazy because it's just like it was not that far removed that these guys were pretty impressive in NXT. But I guess it just goes to show how they refine the process of bringing people up. I was looking for a little more from the Lucha Dragons. I know I'm a fan of them. I know, JD, you're a fan of them as well. Mm-hmm. And they didn't really get a chance to shine here. Primetime Players having a nice bounce. I feel like the cool thing about the Primetime Players is that those are two guys who have been around the company. They've been kicking around. They always try to make the most out of whatever they're doing, and it seems like they're really motivated. And the crowd connects with them. They're good. They're good baby faces. I'm glad they're back together. They weren't doing anything on their own. It's kind of funny that they basically, to people who think back to the way they originated, was just they were both on NXT, like the original incarnation of NXT, kicking around on Tuesday nights doing nothing, and basically by force of will became a tag team. So. they were just directionless, and they were just like, well, I guess we have to do something, and just like made it work. But the New Day is one of my favorite acts in the company right now. They just entertain me to no end.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about what I just said about the Primetime Players kind of like working and getting there, it's like the New Day is like the model of patience. Like they just sat there all those months where it was not working at all and things were just terrible, and they just kind of stuck with it and did the thing, and you can just tell now that they're off the leash. They're just so excited to be over and to be allowed to show their personality, and they're doing it every opportunity. They're a lot of fun. So, like you said, Scott, the match was just kind of a series of spots, really, which is fine. It's a multi-team match, even if it is in the chamber. Mm-hmm. For me, this was more a chance to kind of like evaluate, like, okay, this is our tag division. Not bad.
Oh, the division as a whole is very good, I think, right now.
Yeah.
And it was neat. And by the way, it was neat to see the chamber be used for something other than the world title, which is, you know, it was creative. What they did in the second match, I'm still trying to wrap my head around. But I think that the division is in good shape, although one of our favorite teams did take a major hit, and we'll talk about that in a couple minutes. But it does open the door for a singles push that might be well overdue again. So there's, to use that old term, six of one, a half dozen of the other.
They got a couple teams that didn't even make it into the match, too.
Right, yeah. A couple teams didn't make it into the match, and now you have a team that's gone for a while, but you've got a possibility of an awesome singles push. So, so the New Day retains the tag team titles with a win. The match was just slightly under 24 minutes,
I will say this real quick before we move off it, and then mm-hmm. Jordan, I want you may feed into what I'm about to say or not, is that okay. They've got all these teams. Like, let's start having some non-title-based tag team feuds.
Exactly.
Like, it was great to have them all in the ring at the same time, but let's, you know, put the Matadors and Lucha Dragons in a program that can build to a pay-per-view, you know? Like, mm-hmm. you got all these guys, don't just have them only on Superstars and Main Event until it's time for a multi-team match. Like, mm-hmm. do what you have this deep tag division, use it.
Yeah. I mean, if you got 9 teams on your active roster, you can do more than one tag team feud at a time.
Exactly. I
mean, absolutely. You got 3 hours on Monday nights.
That's typical, you know, Vince tunnel vision. If it's not for the title, it's you know,
yeah, it's
dark match or throwaway, you know, support show type.
It's a typical creative issue right now of the attention span of a 10-year-old. And you know, I mean, look, the late 80s, we had one set of tag belts and we had 10 ridiculously awesome tag teams, all of which could have been tag team champions.
In the NWA, you had the U.S. tag belts.
Yeah, they were lucky that Vince would never go that far. But yeah, you're right. And even with those two pairs of belts, you had multiple tag team feuds.
Sure.
There's a lot less TV back then, too.
By the way, moment of silence for Tommy Rogers. Passed away earlier in the week. One half of the Fantastics. So, so there you go. So the New Day.
Not a very long moment of silence there.
Yeah, whatever. Tommy.
If you're listening, pause it right now.
Rogers. Okay. So there you go. Okay.
Your moment can be as long as you want it to be.
After the moment of silence.
Yes. Yeah.
We should play some elevator music or something. All right. Next up, our next match, another title match, a triple threat match for the Divas title. Your champion, still Nikki Bella, who has held it since Survivor Series.
Yeah.
Taking on Paige and Naomi, and Brie and Tamina were banned from ringside, which pisses Jordan off to no end.
I need my Tamina.
He loves his Tamina fix. And so, good match, a little over 6 minutes. Nikki retains. And let's answer this with a serious answer, because we do have a typical main event answer for this question. But I'll ask you, JD, because mm-hmm. you're the one that'll give me the main event answer.
Sure. JD is the Lee Marshall of main event, women's wrestling expert.
Checking in from Frisco, Texas right now.
A lot of weasels in here. Are you surprised Nikki's held the belt this long?
Yeah, but I think and I'm going to steal an answer from the Place to Be Nation reaction show. Mm-hmm. I can't remember who said it. I think they're just going to have her beat AJ's reign, so AJ's out of the record books at this point. And here's the other thing, too. You know, I've given the Bellas a lot of grief, but Nikki has improved a lot. Who's better than her right now? I mean, I guess Paige is, but does Paige need the belt?
Who's better than Nikki?
Are we talking about WWE Diva wrestlers, or are we talking about the whole roster?
I'm not talking NXTs.
Okay.
People that are on Monday nights right now. Yeah.
I'd still go with Paige.
Yeah, and I think that will be eventually. But I mean, should Naomi beat Nikki Bella for the title? No, probably not.
Yeah, you can make the argument that Paige and Naomi are probably better pure in ring. But when you put the whole package together, like Nikki's got the character. The only problem is, just let her be a heel.
Whole package, huh?
Yes. Yeah.
Like stop.
She was really starting to come around as a good heel unit, and she's gotten better as kind of working as one of the quote. Big men of the, you know, big women. I don't know what you call it.
It's true, though, yeah.
You know, but that's kind of her role in the Divas division. And it's not that she's big in any way, but she's stronger. She seems tougher than them. So she plays that role, and she's done a pretty good job at it.
I got to say, my biggest knock on Daniel Bryan is that he has failed to make his wife the superior in-ring Bella, which...
yeah.
So should we give credit to John Cena for turning Nikki Bella into a better wrestler?
I feel like, you know, the fact that they're obviously training together and, you know, I don't think Cena's in there like teaching her how to do headlocks, but I think his fitness regimen is clearly well off.
She looks buffer. She looks
Well, their pecs are the same size. So.
But to what Jordan was saying, I think a lot of what's great about Nikki right now is that is that she can do things the other divas can't do, and that's owing not to the fact that she went to wrestling school. It's only the fact that she's probably in better shape than 90% of the division. So,
yeah.
I mean, right now, clearly the Divas division, and they're working their butts off, I'll give them that, but the Divas division in NXT is better. I think just top to bottom. Charlotte, Sasha. Sasha's awesome. Becky Lynch. I love Becky Lynch. She's got to keep that day glow hair job, though, dye job, because that's pretty awesome. And has there been a more awesome – in all of the time that we've been watching NXT consistently since the network, so a year and a half, has there been a more awesome heel turn than Emma? Good God, Emma's awesome. And hotter as a heel too. I think I kind of dig the darker hair and the darker colors of her out of her like her wrestling outfit.
I loved her in Unstoppable when she was pretending to do the Bayley clap.
Yeah.
Oh, taunting the shit out of her the entire match.
Yeah, she
typical
does. She
heel stuff.
She's definitely found her niche as a heel. That's pretty awesome.
I am officially pining for Sarah Amato to be the booker at the main roster for the Divas like right now.
Mm.
If we can make that happen.
The only problem that's got to be fixed on the Diva is that, what's her name? Tara Brooke? Is that her name? Or Sarah Brooke? What the hell's
Dana
it?
Brooke.
Dana Brooke. Dana. Yeah, she's greener than
most. She
ain't
out.
Ready. She's like Trish Stratus TNA. Not
yeah, she's like Trish Stratus. Yeah, exactly. She's Trish Stratus 2000.
Mm-hmm. And Alexa Bliss is Trish Stratus 2004 right now.
Yeah.
someone will pick up on it. No, what I was going to say is the kind of happy challenge they have right now is they have all these great female workers in NXT, but the problem is if they bring them up to the main roster one at a time, they risk kind of what happens to Paige, where it's like, okay, well, she's great, but she has no one to work with.
Yep.
So it's like, do you just bring them up en masse? And then the nice thing is that if they can just add a few more divas to the NXT roster, they could bring like three up at once and just have them work together. But
I guess the fear is that if you bring them all up at once, then they kind of saturate each other.
Yeah, none of them become a star.
Exactly.
Not literally saturate each other. That'd be fun too.
Yeah,
that's more like juggle. That's like more like Juggalo Championship championship wrestling.
Put that on the network.
Yeah. All right. So Nikki Bella retains her Divas title in a decent little triple threat, a little over 6 minutes. All right. Time now for the match that pretty much this show will forever be remembered, and that is Kevin Owens and John Cena, 3 seconds shy of 20 minutes, and easily a candidate. I wouldn't say it is, but easily a candidate for match of the year thus far. Storytelling was great. The last 5 minutes was just unbelievable. Edge of your seat stuff that we don't see a lot of anymore. The shocking, although some may say not shocking, but let's be honest, I think we all were a little bit stunned that Kevin Owens got the win. And our man Steve Willey, who couldn't join us tonight, was marking out, hoping for the cradle, the package pile driver, which he almost did.
Yeah. They teased us so bad with that.
Almost did.
I thought that knee was coming up. I'm like, here it is.
instead, he did a suplex with it or something. So.
Well, I think that's as close as you're going to see it. I mean, was him doing the package pile driver under WWE rules, basically.
Yeah.
That was a cool little variation, what he did.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, no, it was.
I don't know what he did in that top rope thing. Oof. On Cena, but that was the most insane thing I've ever seen Cena do.
Yeah, like reversed it to like a twisting suplex. It was
crazy.
Yeah. Cena definitely brought his goods too. It was an unbelievable match.
Put him over clean as a sheet.
Yep, clean as a sheet. We'll get into the post match faults in a minute. I don't want to bury that into the ground tonight, but we do have a couple points we'll talk about. Rish, is it the match of the year?
No, I actually saw. I don't know if I'm giving this away for, a later segment or a later show, but I thought right now Sasha Banks and Becky Lynch is my favorite match this year, men or women. But
wow.
But Owens and Cena was terrific. You know, I want to go back to a match that you love, and that was when CM Punk wrestled Daniel Bryan at Over the Limit.
Oh, 2012. I love that match. Yes.
And it was the first time they had really dueled in a pay-per-view match. It was fantastic. It's the best match they've had against one another. And they wrestled each other a couple of times after that. But, you know, the thing is, like, when the fans watch a great match, when these two guys tussle for the first time, you always say to yourself, oh, man, this is great, and it's only going to get better. But then you realize as time goes by, maybe that was the best match they ever had. And I kind of get that feeling with Cena and Owens. Like, I'm not saying that their matches are going to be any worse after this, but it's really, really hard to top what they did.
Yeah, they really went.
But I'm glad I saw it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
And that is a great point, Rish, because you can also say that about a big feud that took place in the mid-2000s. in which the case was similar, and that would be Triple H and Shawn Michaels. That SummerSlam 02 match is maybe one of my like three or four favorite matches ever. And everyone after that, except maybe the one on the San Antonio Raw, everyone after that was probably a half star less as it went along.
Yeah. I said this kind of similarly to Ben in a previous podcast episode. You don't want to wind up chasing a ghost.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
Yep.
And that will be a ghost because no one's going to top that match.
Speaking of Sheamus. Oh, wait. Yeah. No.
we'll get to the that's a couple matches from now. Ben, we obviously saw that, and then obviously like 10 minutes later, Vince had to stick his wank in this, mm-hmm. and now we will have a rematch in 2 weeks, which is completely unnecessary. They need to let this match this decision marinate for a while, but Triple H is probably clapping quietly. That was really good. And then, of course, in comes, all right, let's do it again in 2 weeks. And everyone's like, oh, all right, whatever. It's your fucking company still. And now we're going to get a rematch. And win or lose, we're not going to split hairs about who wins, who loses. That's irrelevant in this question. Does having the rematch been so close to this match ruin this match? Forget what will happen at Money in the Bank. That's not the point, at least unless it's your point. For me, I'm asking the match this past Sunday, is having the rematch so close from that take away from that?
I'll draw on the past here, the relatively recent past, although I guess, gosh, it's almost 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. When Cena and Punk had that all-time classic at Money in the Bank 2011, mm-hmm. and the consensus opinion of everyone was, great, Punk won, let this sink in, let him be gone for a while, and then when he comes back, it's going to be a huge deal. And then instead, they rushed him back for SummerSlam. They had a fine match, but the feud kind of petered from there.
Fought again at Night of Champions.
Right. And they,
right?
They fought throughout the fall. Del Rio got involved. So
I'm thinking of, you know what? I'm thinking of 2012.
Right.
I'm thinking of 2012. Okay.
But 11, my point is the feud petered out. I don't think it's done anything to diminish that initial match. That initial match I could still watch and, you know, it's incredible. So I don't think anything that happens from here on out is going to diminish what we saw on Sunday. Mm-hmm. I do think it is taking what could be an all-time feud and an all-time push with Owens and mm-hmm. potentially cutting it off at the knees.
Right.
I think we're not going to have trouble viewing that match in a bubble. It was a great match. Mm-hmm. But I am, yeah, I was as upset as anybody, and I've been vocal about it to you guys about how much I hate that they're doing the match again. I hate that they're doing the match again in 2 weeks, especially. Like, mm-hmm. there's really no time to let it sink in. And the promo Owens and Cena had on Monday, this is the one thing, as I will say, like, as upset as I was that they're having the match, those guys talked me on Monday into thinking that if there's any two people who can kind of, like, salvage it, they're making it work. They had a super intense promo on Monday, and it wasn't the typical Cena promo. It was... I like the idea of Owens being cocky about the fact that he beat Cena, and basically being like, I beat Cena. Like, I can do whatever I want. Fuck it. And I even accept the fact that, you know, kind of the common logic is, well, he beat him clean. Why does he need to fight him again? But I like and I don't know if they'll do this nuance with the character, but I like the idea of the Owens character basically being like, I can beat John Cena at will. Sure. Book me with him again in 2 weeks. I don't care. Like, I'll beat him every time, and not really selling the fact that it was really, really hard for him to beat Cena on Sunday. Like, there were a million two counts. They kicked out of so many finishers, and Owens kind of being like, yeah, no, it was easy. I walked in there, I popped a powerbomb, and I beat him. I can beat him again. But the question is, and the thing we're all afraid of is, well, yeah, but if he goes in and gets his ass kicked by Cena, and then it's just like, well, yeah, you're an arrogant idiot. Back down to NXT. So it's really in what happens next. And Jordan and I have had discussions today forever mm-hmm. about, like, can this work? Can this not work? And I've even initially I was like, yeah, it can work. There's a way to make it work. But I've even since like this afternoon, we had the talk, I've thought it over. I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't, maybe it's just too soon, period. So I went a long way around the turn. But
well, it comes down to the last phrase, you know, where's the payoff?
Right.
And, you know, you kind of hope that Owens becomes like the Vader to Cena's Sting, and it's just a guy that has his number. And Cena and Punk was that guy for a long, long time for Cena, but then you know that they kind of went their own different ways. But with Kevin, you know, I hope that they can continue these matches, but I hope that the result is consistent. I'm not saying that Cena losing is a great thing. Some people would agree, but
let me underline it with this one though. I think Cena losing again is fine, but he's got to lose. It's got to be a different match. It can't, and this is where they painted themselves into a corner with the 2 weeks later thing. It can't be the same kind of match. He has to beat him a different way. Like maybe it's
like Sting lost to Vader in a strap match.
Right. Know? Yeah. It's got to be. It can't just be like every time they wrestle
two count epics.
Yeah, it can't be every time they wrestle, they have an intense match with a lot of two counts, and then Kevin Owens wins. He's got to beat Cena in a different way if he's going to beat him.
I got an idea that I think could work at Money in the Bank.
A strap match?
No. Yeah, a chain match.
A chain match.
A Russian chain match with 50 lights. No. How about we kind of do the Owen, no pun intended, I know that's kind of correlating here, Owen and Brett 94, where, you know what, Owen got his win over his brother. He could really care less about anything else at this point. He got the one win he wanted. He proved to Cena he's better than him, and a second match doesn't matter. Cena wants it. And then when Owens is just about looking like, oh my God, he's actually going to beat me, but I don't really care if I win or lose this match, and he grabs a chair or something and just starts beating the shit out of Cena and gets disqualified. And then he could say afterwards, well, you know what, I already beat him. So I don't really have
You're
to beat him again.
Money.
Yeah, I'm playing with – so fuck him. You know what I'm saying? Like I think that can work. I think it is? I think we're getting too hung up, and I can't – and I don't want to – I hope this doesn't go back to earlier episodes of the show. I don't really – when it comes to feuds where – how do I word this?
You want to say that wins and losses don't matter.
Exactly. And when it comes to Cena, wins and losses don't matter anymore. Who gives a shit if Cena wins or loses? Why does that bother everybody?
They don't matter to John Cena.
Yeah, he doesn't give a crap.
They matter to the guy who loses to John Cena every single time.
Well, Bray Wyatt. Well, those other feuds were different.
If you think they don't matter, I mean, everyone exploded when Kevin Owens won on Sunday.
Well, the first time.
Yeah.
First time, yes. And then somebody said, well, why didn't he let Sami Zayn win? Because Sami Zayn losing is more entertaining. Sorry, that's just the way it is for me. Sammy's a better victim.
Well, they also knew Sami Zayn was going to leave for.
Well, that too. Yes, you know? And that too.
Yeah, but also Sami's an underdog character. The whole, story of Sami Zayn is that he loses and loses and loses.
He finds a way to win.
Until he finally wins. Kevin Owens, the story is that he goes
pumps
out there
crap
and
with people.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the story, and that's why actually Scott. I mean, I give you credit for trying to come up with a creative way to book him, but what I don't like about that is it just turns Steen into the typical heel. The typical heel who, when he sees he's not going to win, he cheats.
Yep.
If he cheats to win, that's one thing.
What's an atypical heel then?
Well, to me,
I can
explain
that.
Yeah, go ahead,
and
George.
Here's the thing, too, because something you mentioned, Scott, is what I think could be the issue going forward. Is you said, you know, Owens came in and said he wanted to prove a point and beat Cena. And that's kind of how they book the main show, is everyone's about establishing legacy and having their moments. But Kevin Owens' character is, I want to make money. Mm-hmm. And really his character in NXT is, I've turned on my best friend because the main event is where the money is and the title is where the money is.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why an atypical heel for right now, Monday Night Raw, is a guy who doesn't care about his moment or his legacy or being a Hall of Famer, is I want to make the most money.
And that was also why that was one of the reasons the promo on Monday worked, because Cena was saying, like, bullshit, you're full of it. You're not just about the money. You are about the moment. You are about the legacy. And Owen's going almost to the point where he's going to admit it, but he refuses to admit it.
Yeah, and then he storms off, you know?
Yeah. But no, what I was saying, Scott, is not, yes, heels cheat to win. That's not the point. I don't want to be the type of heel who says, I would rather lose by DQ. Like, I don't know. Something about that doesn't work for me with Owens' character. Like, I don't want him to weasel out of it. Just be like, I'll hit him with a chair and I'll walk away.
Weasel, because that's almost like a sign of, like, fear.
Yeah. Well, Seth Rollins would do that. Yeah. Well, we have a Seth Rollins already.
Let me play devil's advocate here, then. We just said that 2 weeks is a very short period of time. But if we're talking about how Owens wins or how Owens loses, what does the length of time between matches even matter, then? If you have this match at SummerSlam or you have this match in Night of Champions, we're still going to have the same argument. not argument. We're going to have the same discussion about how the match ends, win or lose. So who gives a crap whether it's 2 weeks or 3 months?
That goes back to the kind of the rhetorical discussion of how much context takes part in how much you appreciate a series of matches or matches that go back to back and which one went before the other. And some people have arguments, different like opinions about that. Like some people will appreciate like the second match out of their four matches because it was the best one. And it's not necessarily because it was the first one or the fourth one. You know, it just depends on how you feel the feud itself and how it pertains to the matches that, you know, as they go along, which one you appreciate the most. And, you know, some people just, like I said, some people just have different opinions about that. I don't think it hurts. Like Ben is saying that, you know, well, having it 2 weeks later might hurt the match the first time. But I think as we go along and time goes by, I think we kind of forget about that. And then we just appreciate the match for what it really was.
I'll tell you the one thing Jordan's brought me around on, though, that I wasn't at initially, is the big point is Kevin Owens has not lost to anybody since he's come to WWE.
Mm-hmm.
So when he loses for the first time, it's going to be a big deal. And it should be a big deal for whoever beats him. And we saw it with Rusev. We saw it, I guess, to a lesser extent with Bray. Like, Cena was the first guy to stop them. And it does nothing to Cena because Cena's already as high as he can go. And right. You guys know me. I'm a Cena fan. I enjoy Cena. I think he's great. But after thinking about it for a little while, I don't think him getting the first win on Owens does anybody any favors, because someone's going to get that first win. That's the point of a heel, is to eventually put over a babyface. And if Cena gets it, then if Finn Balor beats him in a couple months, it doesn't mean as much because Cena already did it. He already got there first.
So you didn't feel like that was kind of a tip of the cap by management to Owens just yet being arriving as a main event guy?
I do. I think they give him a tremendous vote of confidence. I'm just worried that they're thinking it's going to be like, all right, well, if he splits matches with Cena, he's on the same level as Cena. No, because John Cena has been around forever. And also you're wasting the chance for someone to be the first person to beat Kevin Owens.
Right.
I don't think it takes away from their confidence in Owens.
I'm not arguing with you. I'm just,
no, I know.
You know.
I think the disconnect between fans and management or whoever's writing the show is, to fans, Cena losing a match isn't that big of a deal. Cena losing a feud is.
Right.
You know, and that's why Brock beating Cena so soundly the past year was so much different than any other Cena feud. Because Cena lost to Bray Wyatt. Bray Wyatt beat Cena. Rusev beat Cena.
We're going to get to Brock in
the feuds.
We're going to get to Brock in a minute, because that philosophy leads me to something else that happened Monday night. But
by the way, I would say this. I don't think the match should happen, but I don't mind being a hypocrite since I'll be there. I'm really glad that it is happening.
Oh, you should be highly entertained, JD. Yeah, you're going to be entertained anyway. I know you.
Hey,
I know you're pissing on all you want, but you'll love
signed,
the show.
I'm thrilled to watch it.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Kevin Owens is the hottest act in wrestling.
Right, if it's going to happen, it might as well be in a show I'm getting to go to, you know?
Well, if it's going to be a pay-per-view, and you know who you always have in your back pocket? Samoa Joe. He's about to drop the, you know, maybe he does do the pile driver and Joe.
Spine buster.
And Joe stops him. And Joe.
Too soon? Okay.
Joe, muscle buster? No, something buster?
Get well soon, Tyson.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bummer. Tyson Kidd got hurt on Monday night. So that's what we were saying about a tag team that got broken
up. And it's
up.
Not real clear how hurt he is it?
It's bad, apparently.
But I heard a spinal injury.
Several. But you know, but as we all know, guys, when it comes to wrestling injuries, several is very ambiguous. Several could be a month, several could be 2 years. Who knows?
Until they really
need
that.
It's not just that. The dirty word in pro wrestling when it comes to injuries is neck. Anytime you hear that, it's like, ooh.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
All right. Good discussion, guys. I was looking forward to that. That's why. That's why I said today. Wow, great discussion by Jordan and JD and Ben. 9 hours before I really want it to happen, but
hey, we can still turn it on anytime.
Well,
baby.
You dived in. It was fantastic. Fantastic.
Your lack of faith in us was astonishing.
What was astonishing? It's clobbering time.
Was it uncanny?
It was uncanny. Oh, God.
Web of.
Was it ultimate?
God.
No,
shut up.
Anymore.
Spectacular.
That's Spider-Man.
Oh, my bad.
Incredible.
Is there a spectacular X-Men?
No, spectacular. There was a spectacular Spider-Man, though, wasn't there?
Yeah, it'll be spectacular.
I thought we were just listing Marvel. That's why.
Oh, I'm sorry, Reese. Was I too old on that?
No, we were going with the X-Men adjectives.
I think you were going with the X-Men adjectives.
All right, yeah, next.
I went Rogue again.
Speaking of,
I went Gambit.
Reese is a juggernaut on this episode.
The history of Reese's house goes back to your house is in True Blood, right, Reese? All right. You live in Bon-Ton.
I love that Sookie.
Bon-Ton. I know. It's not I haven't watched the show, and it's not Sookie, it's Sookie. Come on,
yeah,
Sookie.
Yeah, Stephen Moyer always goes Sookie.
Sookie. I like the show, by the way, but that's a different discussion of the day.
Yeah, all right. Guilty pleasure.
It is. It's you know, Twilight.
Yeah.
With a little.
I watch American Horror Story.
What show are you talking about? Raw?
True Blood.
It's Raw!
True Blood, okay. I've never seen it.
Raw sucks, but it's not sucky. All right. next up, speaking of things that suck.
People would say sucky.
Ben's favorite guy. You know, this match cracks me up.
Speaking of sucky, Ben's favorite guy.
Bojamin, Dallas, and Neville in a rematch, gentlemen, of course. Mm-hmm. From the very first NXT special, NXT Arrival, which I thought that match was awesome when Neville won the title in the ladder match. For those that have never seen that match, go back to the very first NXT special way back last February.
Yeah, go back before it and watch drunk Shawn Michaels on the microphone.
That's right. He was bombed. Oh, yeah. The match was a bore. I think it was just a time filler. It was just under 9 minutes. Not much to talk about. Neville won, which is the right thing to do.
It was kind of crazy that was the popcorn match, though. That was like the, hey.
Not the Divas match?
Yeah, yeah. I guess. Well, yeah, definitely not. The Divas match would normally go there, but it's just, it's crazy that two of your, like, previously red-hot NXT prospects are like, all right, this is a chance for you guys to go and take a piss. We just had a really good match. Main event's coming up. Mm. It's I don't know. It's kind of, it was also a weird clash between a guy who, they entered NXT at the same time, but because one of them got to spend an extra year there while the network was on and while Triple H or whoever figured out how to do call-ups better. Yeah, it was like really night and day.
Mm-hmm. I watched NXT before it hit the network. Bo Dallas wasn't doing much.
Nah. I thought he was a cool heel champion, though. I thought he was pretty cool, though. But Neville was the guy that was ready at that time.
Yep.
All right. Next up. Is the, I wouldn't call this the guilty pleasure, but it was more like the train fell off the tracks match. Your Intercontinental Championship in the Elimination Chamber, because Jordan's favorite guy had to forfeit it, so now he's boycotting all of wrestling and hates everybody.
Steve Willey had to forfeit the Intercontinental title, because that's my favorite guy.
And then he didn't make it on the show, that's why. all right, so the six competitors, Ryback, R-Truth, The Ghost, Sheamus, Space Ghost, Coast to Coast, King Barrett, Dolph Ziggler, and the guy that was going to be in and say former world champion, and a lot of people were saying Kevin Owens, because technically he is. He's former Ring of Honor world champion. That would have been pretty awesome. Instead, it was Mark Henry. Nobody cared. But that brings an interesting point about this match, because it seemed like it was 25 minutes of kind of like staring at each other and... It could not have been the fact that Mark Henry was thrown in at the last minute as the reason why they all looked like they didn't know what in God's name they were doing. I don't know who was in charge of this match, but they should have been fired. Whoever the agent was that put this together, because I have no idea what story they were attempting to tell in that ring. Because literally at some point, all six guys were just standing there looking at each other.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna attribute this point to Jordan Duncan, because Jordan, I think you were the one who made it. On when we were discussing over the weekend, it may have been Steve Willey, but I'm going to give it to you.
I'll say it was me. Yeah,
yeah, let's say it was you for the sake of history. How this was like kind of the island of misfit toys in terms of like every other match is like hot NXT call-ups, like young rising stars. Here's everybody else. Like,
I think
here
it was you.
All the aimless, directionless guys.
No, I think it was you, JD. I know a point you're talking about, Ben. I think it was you, JD. Yeah.
I don't remember.
I wish we could we not remember this match.
I was as drunk as Shawn Michaels, so
that is pretty stinking drunk.
Yeah. Who's the main event? Me. A lot of
communion wine that day.
Who's the ball guy that hates everybody? Me. Oh wait, that could be Shawn too, I guess. But I mean, really, at some point, it was like, what is going on here? I mean, like, nobody, like, there's a lot of, like, loose rolling around, and guys are standing, and there's a move, and then something else happens, and then they're staring at each other, and the Sheamus thing where he's like, what was that whole thing? He wanted to wait until everybody was knocked out and then
The Sheamus thing, yeah. The announcers screwed up.
Absolutely.
Sheamus was pretending he was stuck in the cage, and they couldn't get it unlocked, and then they showed him pull his cross out of, like, the bar where he had his door wedged shut.
It was actually pretty brilliant.
Yeah, it was like a plan that Sheamus, yeah, like he lured everyone into thinking he was stuck, and then when they were all laid out, he casually let himself out, yeah, and the announcers didn't say that at all.
And no, he even did great with
the facial expression and everything, yep, where he was like so smug when he got out, and it drove me crazy because I was like, oh my God, Sheamus just did a great job, like,
because it really did seem like, yeah.
He's so much better as a heel.
Yeah. He is so much better.
So much better.
I've been saying it on this show since episode one.
Yeah, and the
announcers totally, because Cole would not let it go that Lawler called him JR.
Oh,
my God. He had to said it like 7 times in the first hour. Okay, Cole, we get it. You're upset. Shut up.
They do get very self-referential at times.
Such an idiot. Idiot. Ruin that whole moment. I mean,
I'm sorry, Scott.
No, I just told you. No, I don't call you names, Reach. I just tell you to shut up.
That match was a statement against how heavily they script everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the script got changed, they didn't know what to do.
But makes it worse.
A bunch of guys who've been in the ring for 10 years plus, exactly, and they said, "Let's just keep doing roll ups on
you know
each
what
other."
A funny way. You know what's funny? In a weird way, if this was NXT guys, I'd be more accepting of it. I'd be like, "All right, they're young, they're trying, but they're a little out." It's kind of like Orton at New Year's Revolution 07 after Triple H blew his quad and he stood there like a friggin' idiot.
Yeah.
You know, Orton was a little. You know, I know he'd been in the business a few years, but he'd never had to deal with that, so he wasn't quite sure. If it was a bunch of NXT guys and that happened, I'd be like, oh, poor guys. All right, that's all right. You know, get through it, and then you make it up next time around.
You know what the thing is, Scott? It wouldn't happen to the NXT guys, because look who's down there training them. And no knock on the guys who trained these guys, but,
right.
I mean...
No, you're exactly right, JD. Ben, my point is...
Sorry, we're morphing into one.
J-Ben.
Creature.
Yo, what up, J-Ben? J-Benj. But my point is, just for age purposes, all right, you know, I can accept. Yes, you're right. But I'm just looking from the base that, all right, if they were, you know, a bunch of 20-somethings and it's their first big, you know, multi-person match and something threw them off and they're kind of half out of it, I get that. But not half these guys had world championships around their waist.
Sure.
Including R-Truth. 4 of the 6 guys are former world champions.
Most of them were just in a ladder match at WrestleMania.
Yeah, and they all look like complete dopes.
Yeah.
I didn't get it. And it could not have been because they had to do an audible because of Rusev. That could not have been the only reason. Really? You replaced him with a guy that's more experienced.
And it just goes to prove what all the fans know, is that you can't just slap a gimmick on, you know, mid-card level guys and expect it to boost their resume.
Precise.
You got to go out there and you got to do it. Like the Money in the Bank ladder match, the one that Rollins won, that was a match that made everybody look great because everybody worked hard and it had a direction to it. This one didn't. The ladder match at WrestleMania didn't. And it just made it feel lost. Mm-hmm. It made the wrestlers feel lost.
Let me throw something out there, and I don't know how much of a point this is. And again, it's not excusable given the experience of the guys involved, but did it feel like the face heel imbalance really threw them off?
Yeah, like it was 3 faces and Barrett, I think, at the time.
Yeah. Well, Mark Henry was acting like a face, but then the next night was a heel.
Well, because it felt like the minute Barrett went out and Sheamus was doing his thing, they didn't know what to do. It felt like they were kind of like, we're all baby faces. How do we do it? Like, it feels like, for some reason, I don't know why, they just didn't know how to do a baby face versus baby face match. And then once Sheamus got in it, I do think it picked up. I think Sheamus actually was kind of the ring general for the latter half of the match.
Makes sense, yeah.
Kind of saved it. But it feels like if Rusev had been in there, it would have helped. And that's crazy because, like you said, Mark Henry's a veteran and Mark Henry knows what he's doing. But yeah, it was, I don't know, something to me felt off about the fact that, like, once it was like Truth and Ziggler and Ryback, the 3 of them just did not know how to fight each other,
mm-hmm,
which was weird.
Very weird. I agree with you 100%.
When you have a match with Dolph Ziggler in it and you barely remember him being in it, you right. did a bad job.
Yeah, quite true. And so Ryback ends up getting the win. He pinned Sheamus, which was a bit of an upset. I don't think anybody really expected it.
Oh.
And Ryback is your new Intercontinental Champion. And then, JD, your guy came out, Daniel Bryan, and he congratulated him. And didn't Ryback call him Dan or Danny?
Well, that Thanks, was actually Dan.
That's their thing.
Yeah, that's
because he called
thing.
Him the Ryback.
Oh, the Ryback. Okay.
Well, no, the fun thing is they. I shouted this out, and if you guys have ever heard either of them on like a podcast, they're traveling buddies. Like they drive together, and that's what they call each other. They call them Dan and the Ryback.
Wow, so when Danny asks for the time, does Ryback look at his invisible watch?
Wow. So they must have. Wow. That talk about two completely different human beings to be traveling together with.
Which I love. I love the fact that they're friends.
I know, it's
and
so
I love
strange.
The fact that it like
what restaurant do you think they go to together?
Yeah,
Panera,
like an organic steakhouse, or Panera.
One has the steak and cheese. The other has the sprouts salad. And cranberry.
Yeah,
Texas Roadhouse / Vegan Cafe.
Vegan Cafe. Oh God! All right, so Ryback is your new Intercontinental Champion. Main event time. Wow. You know what? Why don't we take a break? Because this one may take a little bit to talk about because it was really awesome. Let's take a break here on episode 36 of the main event. When we return, we will talk about the main event match of Elimination Chamber, some news and notes, and then, yes, chapter 2, oral history of TNA 2003. More main event on the way.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. PlaceToBeNation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlaceToBeNation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past with Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
Chad, do you want your wrestling podcast to be informed by historical and analytical insight and by obsessive watching of footage from any era and any promotion and for them all to be available on one feed?
Sure do, Parv.
Chad, are you ready to shill?
I am, because I know you're talking about the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network.
Let's go through that again. PWOPTBN podcast network.
Got it. That's where you can listen to all sorts of different shows covering the history of pro wrestling in detail.
Shows like Titans of Wrestling with my boys Pete, the man of a 10,000 discs, and Kelly, the jobber lover.
I'm a jobber lover.
Pro Wrestling Super Show with Stephen Graham.
Join me, Stephen Graham.
The smash hit wrestling game show Brainbuster with
Johnny Sorrow.
We have a host of top contributors like wrestling historian Chris Zellner.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris Zellner here, starting a new podcast venture.
And the Pro Wrestling Only admins, the man who knows more about 90s wrestling than maybe anybody on earth, Charles, and good old Will from Texas.
This is Will, and I'm joined today by my good buddy Charles.
Whether it's the territories, WWF, NWA, Mid-South, Texas, Portland, tag team wrestling, Japanese wrestling, lucha, old school, new school, we got it.
And of course, the feed still has the mothership itself,
where the big boys play,
on which we continue our endless journey through WCW Supercards.
PWO PTBN Podcast Network, it's pro wrestling only.
You know you want to hear it.
California, city of angels. Gonna be treasured. Right. I've been preaching this all my life, right, bro? Out the windows. Watch out. There we go.
All right, Place B Nation, welcome back to episode 36 of The Main Event. Scott Stolo with you, along with Ben Morse, Jordan Duncan, Andrew Reich. Place B Nation, your home for everything pop culture. Guess what, guys? We turned two this week. 2 years old.
Happy birthday, Scott.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. I turned.
Are we teething yet?
I turned.
I just crapped my pants, if that helps.
Oops, I crapped my pants. I gotta talk to Grandpa JD for a minute.
That holds a lot of dung.
This picture is a picture of your own feces. Wow, my feces has lemons in it? I don't know. I don't know what's the funnier SNL commercial, that or the Schmitz gay beer. They're both quite hilarious. They are both absolutely
Both good.
All right, PlacementNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. We are 2 years old this week. Stephen Graham with his All Japan Excite Series number 8. Parvin Steven, back from the look at All Japan Pro Wrestling in the 1990s, so check that out. My PIC, Mr. Rosero, and I are refreshing our written vintage vaults, and this week we posted the 1994 King of the Ring. New comments, same ripping of Art O'Donnell. Aaron George with his ROH TV alternative, the great alternative recap. Jason Greenhouse, best summer of music ever, 1995. Diesel and Shawn Michaels, Batman Forever, and the music of 1995. Newest episode of the History of Wrestling podcast, Mr. Cawthon, Mr. Stutz, and Daniel talking the good, the bad, and the dusty.
Not
the dusty you know, Jake. No, not the happier version, not the happier half of that couple. I might want to start and ask her to come on the show. That great episode, by the way. I listened to it.
Does that mean the main event will have a dusty finish?
The day may come where she may talk and say, "Hi guys, I just threw him out. He's outside on the hammock, watching Daniel Bryan."
Ben keeps saying it. We need to have all the wives replace this for a parody episode.
Yes, JD. So you can lie in it in September when it's 7 degrees, because your summer ends a month earlier than the rest
Take
of us.
Take a hammock to my mothership, baby. My mothership.
You know, guys, the three of you would appreciate this, and I told Graham he'd love it, and he was right when he did. When I edited the show and I put the music bump in out of the break, thinking it was a dusty finish, I played the Allman Brothers Midnight Rider.
I get it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good.
Ish. I got it too.
Wait, I thought Greg Allman sang Midnight Rider.
Shut up, Reish.
Good night, everybody. All right.
Show's over. Okay. PlaceBNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. Next week, let's see, Mr. Zero and I, next episode of the PlaceB podcast, we'll be doing, guys, our next vintage vault. A real snoozer.
It's a weird pause there, Scott.
I know. Our next
we're doing, guys.
Guys. I'm trying to create a new open.
So. Hey, guys, guess what it is?
We'll be doing Unforgiven 2004. So, speaking of...
The show where Shawn Michaels got his eye put backwards.
Yes. And so there you go. So that's our... I know that's the next Place to Be podcast. So PlaceBNation.com, your home for everything pop culture. All right, let's dive back into Elimination Chamber. Let's talk main event. The main event. Seth Rollins defending the WWE World Heavyweight Championship against Dean Ambrose. Ambrose definitely has been booked very well the last few weeks coming out of Payback. 21-49, long match for Dean Ambrose. But this match was so much fun. But I got to say, we've got to kick Noble and Mercury to the curb. They're just humps. And not even good humps. They're not even good they're not even good stooges. They're just losers. They really need to turn the Ascension into the modern day Southern Justice. You know, the Godwins had a shelf life. So does the Ascension.
Can I make my case for Patterson and Briscoe? It wasn't just that they were legitimate wrestlers in their day. They were also pretty tall and pretty stocky.
Even in their old age, they were pretty big.
Yeah,
dudes.
Noble and Mercury just look like vanilla midgets.
They look like little kids. JD, awesome match.
Yeah, but I think their match on Raw was better. A couple weeks before that, where mm-hmm. Ambrose first pinned him.
Mm.
I think that match was better. But yeah, it's good.
They were both really good.
You know what I think the issue is with this match, and you mentioned it with the J&J security, with those guys being out there and stuff, and it's maybe an issue with Seth Rollins, is not really Seth Rollins, but Seth Rollins matches, is the crowd just kind of sits around doesn't buy into anything.
Mm.
Because they know that, you know, they don't buy any of the two counts or anything because they know it's going to be something funky, which is why I think I'm not a fan of a dusty finish really any time in wrestling but when Ambrose got that three count, everyone's like, whoa, holy crap. You know, because we're waiting for the interference. We're waiting for this, waiting for that. And it's just so overdone at this point that even when Rollins matches are good and when are they not good, people are just kind of sitting around saying, okay, well, when's the end going to come? You know what I mean?
Right.
And that's not a good thing.
Hmm. But you look back at the Stooges, I mean, they weren't out there for every time the Rock had a match. The whole point of the Stooges were they protected Vince. They didn't protect the guy who was the active champion.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
Right. True.
Yeah. It would make more sense if they were Triple H's guys.
Yeah.
I don't want to say
that's
Seth
the new
Rollins
age outlaws.
Yeah.
I don't want to say Seth Rollins' main events are getting, you know, the R word yet. But
repetitive?
I'm thinking of the other guy.
Oh.
But it's getting close. Like, it seems like there's always an extracurricular. There's always a catch. Mm-hmm. And I just wish it was just kind of like Owens and Cena, where it's just, hey, let's just have a really fucking good match, you know?
Well, the crime, too, is that Rollins is a guy who can get it done. Like,
yes. Yeah.
He's proved his bona fides. Just let him go out there and find ways to win. If he needs to cheat, that's fine. He's a heel. But, like, have him cheat with, you know, hooking the trunks or, you know, sneaking in a belt shot. It doesn't need to always be his entourage, his, like, growing entourage. You know what he reminds me? He wrestles like a modern day Steamboat. He's booked like a modern day Justin Credible.
Is that a compliment?
No, he is a menagerie of freaks around him at all times.
Well, imagine if that match, you know, because they had the segment where Triple H told Reigns, if you come out, your buddy's DQ'd. Imagine if Rollins kind of took that personally and said, you know what, I don't need help either. And he said, and he left, made them all stay behind. And you just got a one-on-one match. And then you still had that finish where Rollins realized I could lose the title and pulled the ref in front of him.
Exactly.
You know?
There is a lack of nobility in Rollins' character despite him being a heel. Right.
And having a guy named Noble out there. Yeah. Still lack of nobility.
I could totally get Vince saying, we can't have nobility out there. We already have Jamie Noble.
Oh, wow. So let's talk about the end. We have some chicanery where Seth Rollins throws the ref in front of Ambrose and Ambrose knocks him out. And a few minutes later, Ambrose hits his finisher, that DDT. And right, is that what it is? Yeah, like a reverse DDT.
Double arm DDT.
Kind of like a mixed old one.
Yeah. It used to be a reverse DDT.
Well. Yeah, he kind of sweeps the leg at the end.
Yeah.
Looks good, though.
It does look good. Out comes a second ref, gets the three count. Dean Ambrose is your new WWE World Heavyweight Champion. But I almost fell for it for a good few minutes. Did anybody here legitimately think we're going off the air and he's a new champion?
I was watching with my son, and he totally did. He was flipping out.
Dan McGinn fell for it. He said it on
when
Graham's
I saw
show.
The graphic,
McGinn's
I felt.
Dan's very childlike.
Well, that's true. He falls for everything.
So. And I love that about him.
Well, I yes. fell for it. I fell for it, too.
Well, having seen the ref bump, you know, I kind of knew, okay, well, they're just going to switch it back. But I thought the show was going to end with Ambrose as champ and just kind of do, you mentioned Night of Champions 2013.
Oh, like that? Where
I thought they were going to do just come out the next night and be like, nope, the ref got it wrong. That's what I thought they were going to do.
That's even worse than a Dusty
Finish. Yeah, way worse.
That's like,
yeah,
that's like that worse. Episode of Dallas when it was all a dream. Yeah.
Well, that was like the original Dusty Finish, because you remember Starrcade 85 when Dusty beat Flair, but Tommy Young saw the arm run in. It was a week before they turned it. That was not like that moment. People forget that. That's
yeah,
the original.
Because you can't have the crowd rioting by saying, oh, by the way, he didn't lose the title, and they're all throwing trash in the ring.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So,
I'll be honest, though, guys. I didn't hate the finish. Like, I know a lot of people were gnashing their teeth, but...
Given that it's a situation that they do all the time where they kind of book themselves in the corner.
Right.
Yeah, that's about as good as you can come up with, you know?
Yeah, but I mean, I guess I didn't mind it because the crowd was still hot. Everyone was still crazy. I got to give credit to Ambrose and also to Reigns for kind of saving this in that we didn't end the show with Rollins cackling and, you know, Triple H raising his arms up and them celebrating. We ended the show with crazy Dean Ambrose and his big backup Roman Reigns
drinking,
being
buddy.
Like, yeah, basically being like, screw you. Mm-hmm. I won. I have the belt. I'm awesome. And just being excited. So it's like, I don't mind that because then the story becomes, all right, we've got this babyface who can clearly beat the heel and he's going to keep going. It's basically like a Steve Austin deal where like they kept screwing him and screwing him and screwing him. And eventually when he did win, it meant something. Now, obviously, I'm not confident that they're going to book the second half of the story, but I don't like to be. I don't mind the beginning.
Let me say, though, Rollins' reaction was magnificent.
Oh, yeah.
With the cross-eyed and like screaming. Oh, I loved it.
He went half Steamboat, half Credible, and then he went full Shawn Michaels on the eyes.
So there we go. There's your Elimination Chamber show. Dean Ambrose is not the champion. Seth Rollins did keep the title. Lost the match by DQ, but Ambrose took the belt anyway and bolted.
Second belt he's stolen this year.
Yes. Amen to him. Yeah, that's true, yes. All right, so now we look ahead to a week from Sunday, Money in the Bank. Mr. D will be in the audience, live, and his little D's, live from the Nationwide Arena in Columbus, Ohio. Sponsored by, and this means you need to eat this food, JD, that day. Sponsored by Sonic.
No, thanks.
So find some tater tots and blueberry soda.
No, the plan is to eat at Chick-fil-A because Michigan does not have them, so we will.
And also, Michigan people don't work on Sundays.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. All right.
A lot of Michigan people don't work on Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays.
Took the words right out of my mouth. All right. So, four matches set at the moment. We do have, as we mentioned, the John Cena versus Kevin Owens rematch. The Money in the Bank ladder match. Here's your six guys. Dolph Ziggler, Neville, Roman Reigns, Randy Orton, as Matt Rotella would say, Kofi Kingston, Sheamus, and Kane. There'll probably be an eighth, I should say. There'll be an eighth. Any predictions? Reesh, who's the eighth going to be?
The eighth one? Did we say Neville was already in it?
Yeah, Neville's in it. Yep.
Neville already is in it.
Yep.
Yeah, fuck it. Bo Dallas.
I knew you were going to say that. Oh, Jesus Christ.
I think Barrett. I think they'd throw Barrett in there.
Okay. Benny?
I thought it was going to be Bray, but then actually all three of the guys who Reigns ended up beating to keep his spot on Monday, Barrett, Bray, and Henry, I thought it was going to be one of those three, but now I'm kind of like, well, they lost their shot to get in, so a little bit at a loss. Maybe Stardust? They seem to be trying to push him again.
And he gets shot with an arrow? And his body
can Steve Amell be in the match?
Yeah, he'll be on the outside.
He could shoot an arrow at the suitcase and just bring it down.
That'd be smart.
Diggle! He can get in the match. and he can keep everybody occupied while while Arrow rappels, takes the briefcase and leaves. We will have a rematch, Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, in a ladder match for the World Heavyweight Championship. I think Rollins wins that one cleanly. And then the New Day will defend their tag titles against the Primetime Players. And there'll probably be a few more, I'm sure. There's a rumor that I think Ryback's facing Big Show for the IC title.
Makes sense.
I think that's.
What are you looking forward to most, the Money in the Bank show or the Tokyo show?
Well, we're going to talk about the Tokyo show in a minute.
I only know the one match in the Tokyo show.
There's a whole
card. Two. I know two.
Lords of Pain released a whole card. We'll get to Tokyo in a minute.
Cool.
I think that's a good show. I think JD, you're up. I think you're in for a pretty entertaining evening.
Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, I think it'll be a good evening. It's live.
Unless you live in California, in which case it's on at 2:30 in the morning.
But they show up late anyway, so maybe they'll just wake up late and it'll be over by then.
I'd rather just stay up late than wake up early, to be honest.
You know what I'm going to do? I'm just going to put the – well, we'll talk about the Tokyo thing in a minute. But so there you go. So Money in the Bank will be a week from Sunday in Columbus, Ohio, and JD will be there. Have a good time. All right. Some news and notes. Of course, the big news that debuted this week, in fact, it was on last night. We're taping, of course, on Thursday. Ring of Honor aired its first show on Destination America. For some reason, it did not record on my DVR because when I scheduled it, the day it was announced, I looked ahead on my DirecTV app, and it said 8 o'clock Wednesday night to be announced.
Well, that's the name of Ring of Honor show, To Be Announced.
TBA and TNA.
I thought it was the Kevin Kelly show. it didn't catch. But who watched it? And any observations? Anything about the not necessarily the content, but the format and the way that it aired? Anything? Anybody watch it? And
I don't get the channel.
Oh. Yes. Same boat. I would love to have watched it, but wow. I don't get Destination America.
I do not get Destination America.
Wow. Sorry, Kevin.
Moving on.
Good luck.
2003. No. Yeah, well, oh well.
Well, let me ask you this, Scott. Do you like the idea that Destination America is trying to like corner the alternative wrestling market?
Well, if
like,
they can.
Should they make a niche out of it by getting maybe one or two other ones? Or do you think that would leave them in a situation where if they cancel all the programming, that everyone in the internet wrestling community will hate that channel forever?
Well, since only 6% of America gets America, it really is a dumb idea. I mean, obviously, they need to talk to. They need to talk to their carriers, DirecTV, Dish, and start putting it on, you know, the more basic platforms.
Well, they got to get on the people in Discovery who have ID in them.
Yeah,
it's got to be on more basic stuff because it's on my guide, but I have to have like a higher cable package. Yeah,
same boat.
That's weird. Again. Mine's on my straightforward. I don't even have. I'm like three packages below the best package on DirecTV, and I have it. So
I do like Risha's assertion there, though, that basically Destination America's fate lies in the hands of the internet wrestling community. Like, if they irritate them, it's all downhill.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because
it's all barbecue 100 marathons from here.
Doesn't take much.
Give us CZW or give us death.
Give us guys we've never heard of or guys only six people have heard. No, I shouldn't. But we'll see. We'll talk more about it on our next show. We'll be 3 weeks into the experiment of Ring of Honor on Destination America. And by then, I would have watched a couple episodes, and we'll talk about it. So
find three other guys who have the channel.
Maybe Willie has it, for God's sakes.
Do you think this officially puts TNA and Ring of Honor on an even keel from like the multimedia perspective, or do you still feel like there's a notch there?
I think this officially puts you three on the Pro Wrestling Super Show for not having Destination America because you're all fired. No.
I think in a way it actually puts ROH ahead because they've also got their syndication too.
Yeah.
Yeah. TV wise, there's no question they're ahead. The one thing TNA still has is international.
International, yeah.
That's the one place they still.
Ring of Honor dipped into Japan a little bit and the United Kingdom, but.
Sure, but their numbers are nothing compared to what TNA does overseas.
The only bad thing is every time TNA goes to England for that like 5 weeks of tapings, by like the third show, you're like, these fans are baked, absolutely baked. And by the fifth show, it's almost like a place empty.
Well, it is England.
Yeah. That's terrible. Are you saying something about? I was going to say something about one of our British employees, but never say anything bad about King James Mander.
Tiny parv.
There's only
I hope we are Steve proud.
We're Santa Milk.
Oh, my favorite Steve Willie line. Tiny par.
Tiny more. Hello. Hello, Mr. Woodling. Oh, God. I got to play that again. We may have to replace an episode of Main Event, which is doing the Christmas episode again. All right. Let's get down to the reason we're the really best part of the show tonight. Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time for Chapter 2 of the Oral History. And since this is about Vince Russo, oral is the key word here. History of Total Nonstop Action. Brought to you by your friends at LOLTNA_history. 2003. Vince Russo makes his debut as Mr. Wrestling 3. He had previously helped Jeff Jarrett win his first NWA World title. The next show featured the first of many Russo shoots on wrestling in general, started by claiming TNA originally stood for tits and ass, and the promotion would have been gritty. Some indications of this original concept remain: cage dancing girls, midgets masturbating in garbage cans. JD, look out the window.
I think midgets was a consistent thing at TNA.
Yes. Oh, Reese, you really missed chapter one. There's plenty of it. The latter would be mentioned at least three times, which is way less than was mentioned last week. On the following pay-per-view, TNA gave Roddy Piper a live mic to plug his book. Piper took his chance and pulled a shoot promo on Russo. The crowd went nuts till Piper said, "Hey, Russo, did you book my cousin Owen's death?" Everything went quiet. Piper continued to rant. Russo came out to calm Piper down. Piper refused to give Russo the mic, hit him with the book, and then verbally berated him and walked off. Speaking of people that were probably drunk, good grief, Piper. Not like him either. It's really awkward.
Wasn't Percy Pringle in the ring too?
That comes a little bit later. After a tag match, Russo came out and responded to Piper's comments. He talked about how he gave the fans everything they wanted, then mentioned Athena. We mentioned Athena on chapter one. Russo eventually brought her into the ring, attempted to get her to flash the audience, slapped her when she refused, and repeatedly called her an ugly wench. Wow.
Was Harris there for that too?
Running into their 15th promotion of their careers, the Harris twins come out, because they always pop a crowd, for the save, but swerve the crowd when they hit their finisher on Athena, because that's what TNA needs, beating the crap out of a cage girl.
And now they work at TNA's office.
TNA security didn't think it was necessary to intervene until she was already unconscious. The whole segment was 10 minutes. TNA.
So to recap.
Yes.
Roddy Piper came out and accused Vince Russo of killing Owen Hart.
Pretty much.
So Vince Russo, to save face, started slapping a woman because she wouldn't take off her shirt.
She wouldn't flash her chucks, pretty much.
It was 2003. We were all young.
She wouldn't flash her Nickies.
It's the same way Russo fights parking tickets.
Yes. Today brought out former WWE mainstay J.J. Dillon, announced him as Bob Armstrong's replacement for the role of NWA representative. Russo came out with the Harris brothers and called Dillon a piece of shit. Accused him of being a pawn of Vince McMahon during his time with the WWF, claimed Dillon was responsible for getting Russo fired from WCW. The segment ended with Sandman attacking the Harrises on Dillon's behalf. Dillon made one more brief appearance in TNA that disappeared from the promotion. He's probably very smart.
Did you just say the Sandman?
Yeah, the Sandman.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, dude, the Sandman, yep.
This comedy writes itself.
Yeah. A video package of Mike Tenay interviewing Vince Russo opened a show intended to introduce Russo to new viewers. During the work shoot, Russo defended putting the WCW Championship, which he referred to as a prop, that's great, on David Arquette, defended ruining the Cruiserweight division with the likes of Ed Ferreira and Medusa. Actually, Medusa was actually pretty good for the Cruiser division because she's actually a good wrestler, and provided one of his most infamous quotes ever. "If you want Lucha Libre, go to Japan." And I'll put the money into the jar for Will and JR. Fucking genius. All right.
Lucha Libre. Go to Japan.
Tony Schiavone debuted, turned heel.
This is the money segment.
Tony Schiavone debuted, turned heel. Looked like he was wearing a sugar daddy shirt. It's like he's
got
a
daddy community shirt on. You know how in Community they have like Evil Abed and he has a goatee?
Yeah.
Yep. Tony Schiavone has a very thick goatee.
Segment. He had a job promised to him by Russo and then never showed up in TNA again. Once again, brilliant. The entire segment lasted a good 10 minutes and achieved absolutely nothing. Fan signs clearly shown throughout the segment included "Who cares?" and "The total nonstop action has officially stopped," written by Jordan Duncan. So what does Russo do? Well, he creates a...
Slapped a woman around
and started a heel faction called Sports Entertainment Extreme.
Guess what that stands for?
Har, har, har. But guess who made his debut in TNA to really pop the crowd? A Flair for the gold. David Flair! He was an axe-wielding psychotic. Tanay and West hyped up Flair, who had been completely destroyed. Remember, this was right after WrestleMania 18, the year before, when Undertaker beat the crap out of him.
Use the same Titantron he had in the WWE?
Probably. He was a huge acquisition for the SEX. Russo also decided to use the axe on the TNA set for shits and giggles during the segment. The debut of both Flair and the axe led to TNA's first iteration of Russo's favorite gimmick match, the insert something here on a pole match. Insert the pole. In the axe handle on a pole match, David Flair wrestled Kurt Hennig in what would end up being Kurt's final match before he passed away. TNA hypes former WCW wrestler Mike Sanders as a big acquisition for the promotion, because everyone remembers who Mike Sanders is.
I loved Mike Sanders.
And y'all know what that means.
Which he joined immediately after his debut. Sanders would then job out to Jim Duggan twice, Moondog Spot, and Shark Boy.
Moondog Spot?
How old was he?
Jesus, wow.
In dog years. How old was he in dog years?
147.
Mike Sanders' nickname was Above Average, and his finisher was the 3.0.
The 3.0.
That was brilliant.
Yes, it was brilliant.
I'll tell you the truth. I never knew what SOL was until Mike Sanders came into my life.
Yeah. The Rock and Roll Express turned heel, joined the faction, and then left. Russo left the company as an on-screen character in an angle that paralleled the Ric Flair-David Flair saga in WCW 2000. Jarrett taped an interview of Russo's sons basically calling him a terrible father. He left the faction in the hands
of... Was that a worked shoot?
Yep, I guess.
No, was his sons calling him a terrible father a worked shoot?
No, that was just a surveillance camera in the living room.
Yeah, that was a shoot.
He slammed my mom when she wouldn't take off her shirt at my birthday party.
Mommy wouldn't flash, just got thrown in the cake. The SEX faction was in the hands of Glenn Gilberti, a.k.a. Disco Inferno, and Mike Sanders, so better hands, I guess. During their feud with Jose Estrada, the faction introduced a Fat Elvis impersonator named Disgraceland to the group. JD, that's you right there. Disgraceland ate during his matches. Gave Estrada a swirly...
This is just an exercise to see how long it takes for Scott to break down.
Gave Estrada a swirly in the toilet after his debut and disappeared after being beaten by Estrada a few weeks later.
I'm just picturing like Ralphus in an Elvis
That's
suit.
What I'm just thinking.
You know?
Little highlight here, guys. Triple X, awesome faction, low key, yep. Elix Skipper, Chris Rico, awesome.
Cool.
Won the tag straps for the stable, which also included the Harris brothers. Really? Because they haven't been in enough stables in their career. All of the crap ones, obviously. And the Rock and Roll Express. This effectively reduced competitors for the tag team titles to America's Most Wanted and the New Church.
Wait, the Robert Gibson, Ricky Morton Rock and Roll Express.
Yes. Yep.
In 2003.
Yep.
The other one.
Let's see.
The other one.
Yes.
The new Rock and Roll Express.
Vince Russo.
Bob Holly and Bart Gunn.
Yes.
They were the new Midnight Express and the new Rock and Roll
Express. The new Rock and Roll Express. Vince Russo returned to TV, but distanced himself from SEX. He claimed ownership of the rights to the stable's name and stripped the group of its gimmick, despite being a nameless and, at this point, useless faction. The now former SEX stuck around for a while and did nothing before quietly breaking up, which would soon become a recurring theme for TNA factions. Let's talk about some other stuff, guys. How about this? First Ultimate X match. For the first ever Ultimate X match, suspended two lengths of rope above. I don't know who in their right mind thinks of this. Two lengths of rope above the ring to form
people
an X.
Who live in Tennessee.
And hung the X Division Championship belt in the middle. To win the match, a wrestler had to shimmy hand over hand across the ropes to the belt and pull it down to win. TNA made a point of emphasizing how the match would have no ladders by calling the tagline, "No Limits, No Ladders." The logic department failed, of course. As soon as one wrestler let go of one of the rope sprang back, and the title belt fell off. As a result, TNA officials had to rehang the belt twice.
I was going
to
say, more than once that happened.
Yes.
It was a long match to watch.
Better than the Sesame Street.
Despite the malfunction, it's a great match.
Oh, yeah. Well, they locked it down eventually.
Yeah, and they didn't have to use the Sesame Street letter anymore that they used to stick up there.
Yeah, the giant X.
The giant X, which I mentioned.
No limits, no ladders. They realize that most matches don't have ladders in them, right?
Yeah, really. Let's see. Don West reacted to this by almost creaming himself and screaming, "Yes!" over and over and over. And then he was selling Mark McGwire rookie cards. We're 99% certain that Daniel Bryan did not get the yes shtick from Don West, because JD, you would be devastated if you found out that he was watching an infomercial at 3:30 in the morning and said, "I like that gimmick.
I need more porridge."
Don West was a great wrestling commentator eventually. Yeah.
Yes. All right. In the – wow, this was a great signing department. Vader showed up. This is one night in TNA. Vader showed up, beat the Harris brothers, and never showed up again. Made sense.
I don't disagree with that.
Paul Bearer randomly
– yeah, right.
Paul, I know. Paul Bearer randomly debuted at the end of a pay-per-view, did practically nothing, bladed, and then never came back. After Russo unmasked as Mr. Wrestling 3, Mr. Wrestling 4 showed up and unmasked himself as Nikita Koloff. Koloff teased turning against Russo before walking out of the company completely, never to be seen again.
Smart. Who's Mr. Wrestling 5?
I didn't know there was a Mr. Wrestling 3.
Me either. Mr. Wrestling 5 on
Mass. So wait, Nikita Koloff, who probably... So Nikita Koloff, who feuded with Mr. Wrestling 2, was Mr. Wrestling 4.
Yes.
Did he go into a time machine or something?
And then Viano 6 was Mr. Wrestling 12.
Because he just wanted to prove he was twice as good, Andrew.
Yes. Moondog Spot tagged with Jim Duggan.
How long was Moondog Spot in TNA for?
and went over Gilberti and Sanders in under 2 minutes, and then Moondog Spot never showed up again because he realized probably shouldn't have a 77-year-old guy on the roster. Mike Awesome hung around with the new church for a few weeks, then he just vanished. And even though he was under indictment for 13 felony drug charges following the death of Miss Elizabeth, TNA thought it was brilliant to sign Lex Luger. TNA hyped his appearance as his first match since the fiasco. Before the match, Luger cut a terrible promo in which he said, he pulled a great Mike Adamly and said, "I cannot wait to wrestle AC Styles," not to be confused with AJ Slater. And during the match, Luger almost made AJ tap in the torture rack, but Sting eventually saved the day. Way to keep your top face strong, TNA.
Still not as good as his Lex Luger's I don't know promo about the
I don't know time.
Super Bowl Saturday.
The nice
Billy,
thing for Luger though is they didn't have to pay him; they just had Vince Russo be his defense attorney. and you know how we got him off those drug charges.
Yes.
By the way, I googled it. Moondog Spot died the same year he was in TNA, and I'm gonna go ahead and say that's why.
So did Kurt Hennig.
Are you implying the two are connected? No.
I am.
Are you saying Don West killed Moondog Spot?
Kurt's like, I'm not implying it. I'm outright stating it.
I'm not saying it because
it's
Don
not West an implication.
Was,
it's an accusation.
Yeah.
He was selling Moondog Spot's bones.
That's what I was going to say. He was selling Moondog Spot's collectibles as a scheme.
Collectible bones in the brown bag. Some other miscellaneous great historical moments in TNA's second year. Goldilocks butchered the national anthem on live pay-per-view.
They let Goldilocks sing the national anthem?
Yep. Lollipop, who was a cage dancer.
Did she blade while she was singing?
Yes, exactly. Lollipop, who was a cage dancer, notable for sucking on lollipops, accepted an open challenge from SEX member Holly Wood. She suffered a nip slip instantly, then got her top ripped completely off, clearly exposing herself on camera, which made Vince Russo happy since he beat the crap out of Athena for not doing it.
Didn't have to pummel her.
Yes. Night. Jeremy Borash was
Vince
waiting.
Russo immediately put the WCW world title on her.
Just to cover up her boobs. Jeremy Borash, whose head is the size of the world title, was waiting with his jacket off and was shown on camera before the incident to cover her up. Larry Zbysko debuted to yell at AJ Styles for being a punk. This led to a match which Styles had to cheat so he could beat a 52-year-old living legend. Since AJ didn't beat Zbysko in under 10 minutes, TNA made Zbysko work as Styles' manager. Russo eventually lost interest in writing the angle, so TNA just got rid of it.
Zbysko was lucky to make it out of TNA alive.
Yes.
Yeah. Zbysko was in TNA for a long time.
Yeah. Oh, that's right.
A feud
he knew what would happen if he left.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know, yes. A feud between Brian Lawler, David Flair, Eric Watts, and Dusty Rhodes broke out of the NWA world title belt. The catch was that none of them were the actual champion. Ric Flair.
Those are a lot of good last names.
Yes.
What a terrible person.
Yeah, terrible children. Right.
That's like having Seth Curry and Michael Thompson.
Yeah. Ric Flair owned a replica of the title belt awarded to him for services to the wrestling world, a replica which he gave to David as a present for getting serious about wrestling. When David brought his belt to the tapings, Dusty said David shouldn't have it despite being David's actual legal possession. AJ Styles, and if anybody gets offended here, I apologize, but I'm just reading it. AJ Styles busted into the SEX locker room with a chainsaw, threatened to cut Glenn Gilberti into pieces, and then flat out called him a faggot.
Yeah, AJ used to do that a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, not the chainsaw thing. Well, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what he does at home.
Raven.
I would bet he was the babyface that night, too.
Oh, yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
In the Deep South? Of course.
Raven became the first
wrestler. What kind of Deep South?
To cross the line and join TNA immediately after his departure from WWE. He became a major figure in the NWA title scene after his TNA debut and earned a title shot after about 4 months. During that title match, Jarrett overcame odds that would make even John Cena cringe to defeat Raven and deflate all of Raven's momentum in the process.
In all seriousness, though, was I think Raven may have been made history by being the only guy who had a better TNA career than WWE. TNA was a great career move for him.
Can we argue Kurt Angle?
I was going to say he maybe not far off, except the fact that Angle was huge in WWE and then continued to be huge in TNA.
Yeah.
Raven was his career was going down the toilet in WWE, and he saved it by going to TNA.
And then there's Jeff Hardy.
And then Raven ended up having a pretty decent little run in Ring of Honor.
Yep.
The New Church, which was a stable made up of Malice, Slash, Brian Lee, and manager James Mitchell, accidentally turned face when TNA booked a heel-versus-heel tag team match. Considering how TNA had built up the tag team as evil for weeks, it seemed untimely to debut yet another heel stable. Kid Cash beat Abyss in a First Blood chair on a pole match.
Chair on a pole.
Yep.
Did you have to get the chair and make someone bleed, or was it either or?
Did you have to sit on the chair while it was on the pole?
Was it multiple choice?
Yeah.
While Lollipop came out and bladed.
Yes, Lollipop came bladed, and then the midget jerked off.
Did you have to pop the chair off of the pole with a chainsaw?
Did you say pop and Lollipop?
Yeah. It's not like he was going to say pop something else.
Yeah.
But. Yeah, so did I.
In order to promote the X Division as having no limits, TNA debuted a muscular wrestler known as the Masked X, which is actually former Quebecer Carl Ouellette, as a monster heel. This actually went pretty well as he squashed his opponent and the commentator pushed the idea of X's finisher, the package pile driver. Great move. As a death-like
muscular is a generous way to describe
it. Yeah, very. It was probably
when Abyss debuted, he did look awesome and frightening. Mm. I'll say that.
During his second match, things went slightly wonky when he attempted a swan dive and almost killed himself. He would vanish from TNA before the year was out. TNA added an X Division trophy to the X Division Championship because you can't have enough things to give people in a division. TNA never explained the trophy's purpose, but at a best guess, the trophy worked as a signifier of who was the number one contender. So if you don't have the belt, you have the trophy.
So this was like the King of Cable.
Yes.
Yeah.
You didn't win anything, but... Here you go.
Michael
and they gave out ribbons to everyone who lost the match.
Everybody participates.
Yeah.
Michael Shane had one. Chris Sabin had the other. So they had a match. At the end of the night, Michael Shane won both the belt and the trophy. He then frequently...
Bentley bounce!
TNA never explained why he had to carry both things since he was already champion.
He was his own number one contender.
Mike Lockwood. We all know who he is. Crash Holly. Debuted in July as Mad Mikey with a gimmick of being mad at things.
And guess what?
I thought that was Jordan Duncan's gimmick. He wrestled on 9 of the weekly pay-per-views, and then a month before his death, left the company.
Yeah, see? You see what happened?
He tried to get out.
Did Jeff Jarrett know people we didn't know?
Yes. And our final point before we end our chapter, the Hulk Hogan era 1.0. He's not coming to TNA. In October, Jeff Jarrett attacked Hulk Hogan at a press conference. You remember this?
That was in their opening video for years.
Yes, the attack was supposed to lead into TNA's first ever $30 supercard pay-per-view with a main event of Jarrett versus Hogan. When Hogan learned Jarrett would go over, he came down with mysterious aches and pains and pulled out of the deal. The whole thing became meaningless when Hogan eventually came back to WWE. He didn't appear in the TNA ring, of course, till 7 years later, but trust me, we'll get to that chapter down the line.
He did the El Kabong on Hogan in a press conference in Japan.
That's what that was. It was Japan.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
The footage of the attack was replayed countless times and even made it into the 50 Greatest TNA Moments DVD.
Yep.
That's genius.
Yep.
Now, to be fair, that really was their greatest moment.
Yeah, even though it was something that never actually happened. Part of the issue with Hogan coming in went back to Bash at the Beach 2000, where Jarrett laid down for Hogan in a worked shoot. In a speech after the match, Russo came out and called Hogan a bald son of a bitch. Hogan, despite being in on everything that night, sued for defamation because he didn't like being called bald.
Who does?
The lawsuit still existed 3 years.
I don't.
Yeah.
even though you do it on purpose. Actual tension existed with the booking and creative team. At the time, TNA Creative dismissed Creative, we wish. TNA Creative consisted of Jarrett, Russo, and Dirty Dutch. Of course, Zeb Coulter. We love Dutch Mantel. So does Will. Jarrett and Mantel would come up with a scenario and agree to go with Russo's plans, then wait for Vince to leave, and then they change everything. When a paranoid Russo learns he had been in discussions with Hogan, Russo saw the move as a betrayal and made the decision to leave TNA. To make him to take himself off
television. And of course he doesn't die.
Did Vince have to go to the other room to go recruit like hot chicks while they just rebooked the whole yes. show?
And then when they said no, he beat the crap out of them. To take himself off television, Russo had Jarrett beat him up. Russo told Jarrett to make it look as real as possible, and he suffered a concussion because of it.
Oh my God.
Second time he's gotten a concussion from a wrestler that he booked.
Yep.
Interesting, we call it the Hogan 1.0 era because that's a rating number they could never quite hit.
They're number one.
Nor could they ever get their buy rates that high either.
Yeah.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Chapter 2 of the oral history of Total Nonstop Action, brought to you by your friends at PTBN's Main Event. Coming up next time, 2004, which includes such gems as Johnny Fairplay.
Ooh, Survivor.
You can read that. Maybe I'll let you read that one.
Did he die after TNA was over?
His grandma died.
JB,
that's what he told everyone.
So there you go. So there is part two. I hope everyone enjoyed it. We also will have the first official TNA pay-per-view in 2004 coming up next time as well. So there you go. All right. Now, we have a few minutes. I wanted to make sure we got that out of the way because I didn't want to lose the spot. But let's talk about this card in Japan real quick because more matches have been announced. Let me see with the official. For those that may not know, it turns out that on Saturday morning, the 4th of July, WWE will be live streaming on the network a supercard house show from I think it's Sumo Hall in Tokyo, Japan. And I know there is a story that has the whole... Here it is. All right, so it'll be live on the network, 6:30 a.m. on Saturday morning, the 4th of July. So, like I said, I was going to do, guys. I don't know how you'll do it. I'm just... I can't sleep in silence anyway. I need to have something playing in the background. So I may just leave the stream on and just fall asleep, and maybe I will randomly wake up and there it'll be. That's probably what I'll do. If anybody wants to stay up or whatever or try and set your alarm, what's that?
That sounds terrifying.
Look up. Oh my God, Japan!
Scott's afraid to sleep because TNA brought him in as a consultant once.
Yes. And now if I leave the company, I'll be hit by a bus.
If he goes to sleep, he'll never wake up.
I'll never wake up, which means I can never watch the TNA, any of the TNA. If I put on the Jeff Jarrett King of the Mountain set, that's four discs. That'll take forever. All right, here's the card as of now. One of these might change because of injury. The Lucha Dragons versus Los Matadores.
That's fun.
John Cena and Dolph Ziggler versus Kane and King Barrett.
Ew.
Chris Jericho versus Neville.
It was originally Jericho, Finn Balor.
Yep. And we'll tell you where Finn Balor will be. Mm-hmm. Brock Lesnar versus Kofi Kingston, which brings an interesting point about why Kofi.
Bank. So excited.
Yep.
Yeah.
For the tag team titles.
It's a new day. Well, for you to get your ass kicked.
Brock's going to join the new day. Start clapping.
The dance. That would be fantastic. Speaking of the New Day, they will be defending their tag team championships against, well, it was originally against Cesaro and Tyson Kidd. Obviously, that's not going to happen because Tyson Kidd's hurt, so they may insert another tag team in their place.
Real Americans reunion on the 4th of July.
Hell yeah, baby. Mega power.
In Japan?
Yeah.
Whatever.
You know what, though? Why not? Jack Swagger's doing nothing.
Yeah. We have and plus, that theme was always kind of cool anyway. We have a Elimination Chamber rematch, Paige, Naomi, and Nikki Bella for the Divas in a Divas title triple threat. And the main event, and I have a feeling this will be the last match, Kevin Owens will defend his NXT championship against Finn Balor. Obviously, Balor cashing in his spot from maybe, I don't know, what do you think? Is this just an extra spot, or is this actually his opportunity?
Yeah.
Did you figure that out yet?
This is his shot.
Okay, it is his shot. That's what I figured. Good show.
Probably interesting matches.
I'm sure it'll only be like an hour. I'm sure there's going to be more matches.
I wonder how the Japanese crowd will be like because it's not a Raw show. but they're going to pimp it a little bit on the network to make it look fancier than just an ordinary show,
mm-hmm.
and see how they treat it and how long the matches go.
I mean, they're basically televising a house show, right?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Which is what we've wanted them to do.
Yep.
You know, because Japanese crowds are very different. You know, they go, ooh. You know, they don't, like, go bananas all the time. You know what I'm saying?
You know, I feel like that was a thing a while ago, but I'm not sure that's – I mean, granted, other people watch it more regularly, but I feel like from the Japanese cards I've seen more recently, they're more like American crowds now.
Yeah, like the New Japan show that's on – Yeah.
The New Japan show, it's not like they're sitting on their hands. They're reacting. So
well, they kind of know how to respond. They know if they go out work strong style, they respond that way. But they know the American product, and
they do a lot of golf clapping.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's more of a how they were like in the 90s. I feel like now, you know, when they taped Raw in Japan a couple of years ago, and it was a pretty normal response.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see. It'll be interesting.
Oh. There is that Brock versus Kofi match really gets my hopes up about going to Money in the Bank.
Yeah, Brock taking over for Kofi.
I can't wait till Kofi
walks out, murders Kofi, wins the briefcase.
I'm just excited to see Brock fight somebody new, and I'm also excited that it's Kofi who can bump like a maniac.
I predict the finish. Kofi jumps on Brock's shoulders. Brock lifts him up and then catches him in the F5.
Yep.
Yeah.
That would be awesome.
But don't forget, it's still well documented that Brock still has his rematch from when he lost at Mania, because that was the whole big thing the next night when he got pissed off and beat the crap out of everybody. So I'm almost thinking, does he really even need the Money in the Bank? Because he already has a title. I mean, imagine if he had both. He loses a SummerSlam and then just F5s whoever, and then just cashes it in right after. That would be so Brock. It would be awesome.
You know what would be awesome is he gets his rematch and just murders the guy, gets DQ'd, just hits him with – remember when he had that Big Show match at the Rumble? He just hit him with a chair 40 times, gets DQ'd, and then catches in.
That would be pretty awesome. So maybe that's something they're thinking of. Maybe they're – you got to be creative with Brock. You can't treat Brock like just another guy. Right. Whatever you do storyline with him has got to be something special. I have faith in that. I do for Brock. I have faith in
that. They've gotten Brock right. For all the things they get wrong, they've gotten Brock.
Yeah, Brock, they haven't
lately. They've gotten him right.
Well, I know, Reese. You and Dr. G still want to hang him in effigy, but even I'm kind of softening up to it. Maybe because he's not champion anymore, I don't have to care as much.
Yeah, you left me behind on the band.
I did not leave you behind.
And now I'm sitting here by myself with my donkey who's crapping on my hand.
What?
As a TNA episode.
I feel
Reese
like
versus a donkey.
The midget in the trash can was in the other side.
The jackass and the jerk off.
And Moondog Spot was driving it.
And then they all vanished. Never to be seen again.
Maybe Moondog Spot's the eighth guy in Money in the Bank.
Maybe it's Brock Lesnar.
maybe Brock Lesnar's been Moondog Spot the whole time.
Moondog Brock?
Can we just have Brock Lesnar win every match at Money in the Bank?
Moondog Brock. Let me tell you something. I'm going to wrestle in midgets in a Divas match. All right. Very quickly. Before we go. Benjamin. You watched the Stone Cold podcast?
I did not.
Okay.
I usually listen. I wait until it comes on Podcast One and listen there.
Okay. JD, did you watch the podcast?
I did watch it, yes.
What'd you think overall? I mean, it's like the fourth time he's had Heyman on, so it wasn't that big a deal in that aspect.
Yeah, it was fun. It was pretty cool. I love the story with the Samoans and the Steiners.
Oh, yeah, buying the food.
Just makes you think they're all lunatics.
Yeah, they are
nut
jobs. Yeah.
And I'm sure you're probably asking about the last couple of minutes.
All of a sudden, it's crazy. You have to watch it, Ben. I think, Ben, you may need to watch it.
Yeah.
More than
listen to it. Listening to it is not going to do it justice. You've got to look at it. Because you got to look at the look in Austin's eyes.
Yeah. I got some time this weekend. I'll carve it out.
He busted to Carney mode.
I mean, he went from...
Yeah, you can just fast forward, Ben, to the last...
Yeah, the last... I mean, the shit's good, but you're not... But I mean, and Heyman has good insight, but you're not missing much in that aspect.
Right, you can listen to the rest.
But the last 5 minutes, literally, you look in his eyes, and it's like all of a sudden 2015 Stone Cold turns into 1998 Stone Cold, literally all in one word, in one sentence. And I'm like, what the hell just happened here? And Heyman's looking at him like, oh, I see what we're doing here. And Heyman's got that like, I'm digging this. And why?
But you know what, though? Having said all that, I'll believe it when I see it.
I'll believe it when I see it, too. But Austin doesn't seem like the kind of guy that would make that crap up. He looks like one that, like, I'm not going to just say crap to say it.
Yeah.
And to come up with a specific – I feel I don't want to ruin it because Ben hasn't seen it yet.
I know what happened.
Oh. Well, yeah, I'm sure he's right about it.
Yeah. I've got the internet.
The fact – you do? I thought you just did podcasts with visiting wrestlers that steal your inboxes.
Basically what happened is the Moondogs did a run-in.
Yes. You do have a lot of TNA guys. Is everything okay when they walk out of the Marvel building? Get in the cab. Smash! It's kind of like what's the
Final Destination?
No, the close though. No, what's the movie that where Brad Pitt's the dead guy and he gets hit by the two cars at the same? What movie is that?
Meet Joe Black?
Yes, thank you. Where he gets hit by the two taxi cabs. That's kind of what happens.
I've never seen that. I thought he was the devil.
No, that was the Devil's Advocate. Oh, wait, that was Al Pacino. Never mind.
No, that was the Devil's Own, but that was a different movie.
In any event,
now we're all confused.
why would Austin just out of the blue, say Texas Deathmatch? Why would you specifically give a gimmick instead of just saying, "Oh, I'll just kick his ass whenever I want"? All right, podcast over. Goodbye. But to get into promo mode, and actually come up with a specific. You know, a specific type of match, not an accident. Maybe it's me being carny still, but whatever.
I think it's happening.
I kind of think so, too. But like JD and Ben said.
Oh, I don't think it was an accident, but.
They've got to sell out a 100,000-seat stadium.
Yeah, they got 9 months.
And honestly, a rumored triple threat Shield match. And Triple H Rock with Ronda Rousey is not enough to bring 115,000 people. Steve Austin versus Brock Lesnar, where they literally take every piece of solid object on the planet and pummel each other with it. Yes, 115,000 people. We'll see. Gentlemen, this was one of the most bizarre episodes in the history of Main Event, but I seem to say that. I seem to always say that, though.
One of our 36 most bizarre. 37.
Yeah, 36. This is the 36th most bizarre episode in the history.
You're getting with this lineup. I don't think we disappointed.
No, not at all. Yeah. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We will. We'll see who's on. Maybe we'll bring Willie. One of you will sit. Who knows? We're trying to get some more special guests as well. But we will. Whoever's on, we will recap Money in the Bank and look ahead to Battleground. Right? Yes, Battleground.
Yeah.
Which will be July's show from, where is that show? I think St. Louis. The History of Scott Trade Center. It all started in 19... mind. Anyway.
Tell us more, Scott.
Harley Race, in 1975, took on one of the Funk Brothers... No.
Moondog King.
On our special episode of Brain Busters. I got some... I'm working... On a side note, though, I'm going to start working something since we're doing this... kind of working together with PWO and, of course, the awesome Dangerous Alliance podcast with JT and Will. I'm trying to work something with our show and Mr. Sorrows. We're gonna work on that. For Ben Morse, Jordan Duncan, Andrew Reich, I am Scott. You've been in the Main Event. Wake me up at 6 a.m. 4th of July. Talk to you.
Does anybody remember that epic feud between the new Rock and Roll Express and the new Midnight Express? I miss those days.
Go on, Reed. Putting funny in the back of my car. I'm sorry, honey, if I took you just a little too far. Yes, I too far. So I told the fellas out behind the bar. Told them to tell you, honey, just how fine you are. Yes, I guess you are. You see, I'm begging you, please. Begging you, baby. Begging on my
tonight.